afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adask, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And today is Tuesday, July 18th, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Another good day for gold today, up 820 in the New York spot after market price, 1242.90 off the high of 1245. Up strong, stayed strong, and good day for gold. Silver was up a little over 1%, up 0.18 at $16.36. Platinum was up a buck at 931, and palladium was down one at 871. You have the USDX today, and of course that was the reason for a little bit stronger case for gold today. Down 0.48, and that is off the low. It was as low, I believe, as low 0.66, but we're looking at 94.67 for the USDX. Crude oil today was up 0.41 at 46.43, and the paper markets today, we are seeing the Dow down 53 points, 21,576. Both the NASDAQ and S&P were basically a little bit stronger. The NASDAQ was up 30 points at 63.44, with the S&P up 1.5 bucks at 24.60. 10-year yield was lowered 0.05 at 2.26%, and the euro popped just about the same amount as the dollar, was down 0.68 at 1.16. And European markets were lower overnight. Oh, was that little, no fear yet in that emotion driving that market. So it's still closer to the greed than it is to the fear. But I suspect that that fear might be coming in here pretty soon. So we saw the U.S. dollar slump today, Al, against all major currencies, and they are blaming it on the Republican leaders in the Senate because they did not have the votes to even begin debate on the legislation of the health care. And they, different strategists and analysis, and they say,
well, Trump says
they're going to blame Trump. Pardon?
Well, they can blame Trump if they want to, but I mean, they can blame me if they want. But Trump says, all right, fine. I mean, a certain amount of this is just sour grapes from his report. Says, all right, I'm just going to let it fall under its own weight. We can't repeal it and we can't amend it. Fine, let it just die under its own weight. And I don't doubt he's making the best of a bad situation, but the truth of the matter is, everybody seems to think it will die under its own weight. And it might be the best thing to do with it. Instead of trying to amend it and the rest of that and take the blame, if it dies under its own weight, who's going to get blamed? Obama. I'm going to say, look, you set up a dumb program to begin with, and that's why it died. All we did is we didn't even try to repeal it, and it died anyway. So we'll watch and see how this goes. We'll see how it unfolds, but truth of the matter is, you know, if he says he's going to just let it die, not necessarily a bad idea.
The truth of the matter is they don't have a plan. The truth of the matter is they can't change this giant legislation because of our system is probably too fragile to handle anything that would be produced by replacing and repealing Obamacare. That's why they can't do anything. That's why they can't do the tax cuts. That's why they can't do any of these big programs, because our economy and our system, our financial system, is so fragile. They know it's they don't have options.
Well,
broke. When you're broke, you don't have a lot of options to build things, to create things, to change things. You're stuck. And this is exactly why they can't do anything. They can blame whoever they want to blame. And the point is, they can't do anything to it.
I think the reason they can't do it is because the Republican Party is split. The Democrats will pretty much stand up for Obamacare, is my guesstimate on this thing. But the Republicans, the conservative wing, they don't want any part of it. They don't want to just amend it. They want a complete repeal, which means the Republicans, even though they're a majority in the Congress and the Senate, it means that they're not acting like a majority. They're acting like they've got two or more Republican wings, and they can't seem to agree, and therefore they can't come up with enough votes to repeal this thing.
Well, because, yeah, some of them probably know what's going to happen. And the thing of it is, they're all to blame. Who's to say they could have had to replace and repeal this thing 1 month after the new administration got into place? I mean, you just can't change something this huge, and this is a huge deal. They can't, hey, take your time. Come up with something that everybody that, but they rushed and rushed because they wanted to get the tax cuts done. They wanted to get this done because they needed it for the so-called economy. They can't get it done. The economy's going to sink. And so, yeah, you might have some arguments between this and that and bad feelings and so forth. Put blame here, put blame there. But the whole, it can't be done. It will fail. Or will the economy fail first and they'll blame it on Obamacare?
I don't really know what they're going to do, but I mean, it makes, like I said, a certain amount of sour grapes says, all right, if I, you won't no, vote for me, we'll just let it die on its own. I don't know, might have been the smartest thing to do all along instead of trying to get involved. I mean, it attracted certain number of voters to Trump to
but
say we're going to get rid of Obamacare.
Now they're not even going to repeal it.
No, I know. They're just going to let it die. Better than a repeal. Nobody has to take responsibility for it. You know, it's like, you know, we can plan to murder Uncle Frank and get his and get all the money that when he dies, or it turns out he's going to die anyway, so just let him go. We don't even
that
have to go through the motions of killing it. We'll just wait and he'll be dead and we'll inherit.
And that also means the sixth of the economy will also fail. So again, this does have long-reaching legs into the economy.
And well, I understand it's, but...
But they can't fix it because they don't have the money to fix it. And they're trying to fix something that they don't have the right tools, which is money, to fix it.
Well, there's another point. You're talking about a sixth of the economy is tied to this. A sixth of that economy is depending on government subsidies. Right, this thing goes down, that sixth of the economy can actually, they're going to have to start learning to support themselves. And there's going to be some adjustments, and maybe they can't charge such high prices, but if they want to keep playing doctor and playing nurse and rest, that sort of thing,
and that's
somebody's
okay.
going to have to take
I don't have a problem with that.
No, I don't
know. Long stretching legs mean lots of job layoffs. It means lots of businesses closing. It means, you know, it means we go into a recession sooner than later. And, you know, it's part of why we can't heal, but it's something that has to happen. And people won't be ready for it. People aren't ready for it. I mean, we talk every day on this program about getting ready for, you know, what we face here in the very near future. And there's a lot of people sitting on the fence because, hey, the Dow is at a record high. The NASDAQ's at a record high. The S&P is at a record high. You know, so they don't have any reason to change at this point in time.
They don't have any objective reason, but they have reason. I mean, it is high. It is at record highs. I mean, there is no objective support for those record highs, but nevertheless, it is. You got to sit there and say, well, it is, yeah, but it still is at record highs. And it's a bizarre situation. It's a little bit like Santa Claus is finally bringing me that pony. You can say, well, I don't know. I never believed in Santa Claus, and they can't have fat men flying around in a sleigh behind reindeer. But nevertheless, there's the pony. I got the pony. So there's a kind of emotional reason, right? There's not an objective reason, and that's the danger. And it also, because it's an emotional support for these record levels, it will also be driven by emotion when those records collapse, and that means panic.
Absolutely.
We will go from greed, to the emotion fear, and this thing will go down just like it went up. And there won't be objective reality to prevent it from going down. The moment will come when the emotion will shift, and you know, people will be screaming, wait, where's the objective reality to support these records? There isn't any.
There was an interview by Neil Cavuto, and he was interviewing a man by the name of Duffy, Terry Duffy, which he is the CEO of the CME Group.
Mm-hmm.
And during this interview, which the interview was last week, he claimed that given all that's going on in the world, gold should probably be $5,000 to $6,000 per ounce.
I understand.
And, you know, here's someone who knows exactly what goes on behind the scenes and how things are manipulated. I know he just recently had, I think he just recently had lung cancer or some sort of lung problem. So, you know, maybe he's changed his tune and, you know, maybe he saw the light and decided to come out and, you know, and say things. But gold and silver should be. Gold and silver should be at $5,000, $6,000 with everything that's going on in the world. And again, here's just, they know it. They know it. It's just the general populace who doesn't. And they might know that something's, you know, well, you know, it's, something's weird, but what am I going to do? I don't have any other options. Well, yes, you do. You do have options. And of course, one of those options is giving us a call. Get rid of those fiat dollars. Get out of the risk market and get into something safe that has so much more upside potential than anything else. And I mean, it's just really a no-brainer. And even if the market continues to rise, gold is still there protecting your purchasing power against everything that's coming our way. And it always will. It has since we've been able to own gold once again. And it's an incredible buy at this point in time. So, and I was right. I knew after the, you know, holiday and everything else, you'd start seeing gold and silver begin to rise. Yeah, you could become technical and say, yeah, they're covering their shorts and this is what's pushing the markets higher. You know, it's happening at the same time. So, you know, I'm more correct than they are. So I'd have to say I'm more accurate as far as timing and seeing the markets turn around. And now we got some legs. We got a weaker dollar and we got some other things promoting the stronger prices of gold. And I really didn't think it would break 1200 this time. And so I'm pleased that it didn't. And we'll have to see if it can again go past those 1300, higher
1325.
Well, let's get past 1250, you know, and then we'll see if we can't break 1300. This time, I think we will. But and the same way with silver, you know, it's gonna have, it has a lot to recapture, but silver moves quick, and I have no doubt that it will. So.
You know, we're talking about the Trump administration to some degree with the with Obamacare. Trump has done at least one thing that's working. And here's something from Constitution.com, and the headline is Border Patrol head honcho heaps praise on Trump-inspired drop in illegal crossings. Donald Trump ran a campaign heavy on the idea of national security in all of its iterations. Not only was Trump tough on terrorism, both foreign and domestic, but his stance on securing the nation's borders was second to none. Well, they're pointing all of this has combined to stymie illegal border crossings. Even though the wall isn't built yet, we have reduced border crossings. The significant downturn in the number of illegal border crossings between the U.S. and Mexico is nothing short of miraculous. This is from President Brandon of the National Border Patrol. If you look at the rhetoric that President Trump has given, it has caused a number of illegal border crossings to go down. We've never seen such a drop as we have right here. He goes on, there's been a 53% decrease in the number of apprehensions at the southwest border since last year. The drop in apprehensions indicates a drop in attempted illegal crossings. The point here, this is about rhetoric. The reason we had so much illegal so many illegal aliens pouring into this country is in large measure because President Bush and then President Obama have encouraged us. Don't worry about it. We're not going to enforce the law against you. Trump said it stood up and essentially just said, hey, we don't want you here. And the people and the illegal aliens got the message, and the number crossing the border dropped by half. And the implication is maybe we didn't ever really need a wall between the United States and Mexico, but we did need a government that would enforce our immigration laws. And both President Bush and President Obama declined to do that. They encouraged illegal aliens to come in, and sure enough, they did come in. And it raises a really interesting, to me, interesting insight. A lot of what we saw, this wasn't about a poor border security. This was about presidents working against the best interests of the American people. They encouraged crime, and we got crime. And now that we've got a president who doesn't, who discourages that form of crime, it's diminishing. So it's interesting. The wall is apparently starting. They're beginning to build the wall. They have funded the at least the initial part of the construction. The wall is beginning now, maybe even this week. But Trump, just by talking, right, just by taking a stance, and by refusing to take that stance, refusing to protect the borders, refusing to obey the law, encouraging criminals, it's like these sanctuary cities. They're doing the same thing. These sanctuary cities are doing the same thing. They encourage the illegals to come in. Watch and see. You're going to get a lot of illegals. All you got to do to stop it is speak.
I think what Trump did more important to bring down those numbers is he supported the law enforcement. Mm-hmm. He had their backs. And so they did their jobs.
Yep.
And I think that was the key because there was and they did increase troops and everything along the border. They did increase immigration, ICE and so forth. So that is certainly helpful too. But again, you have an administration supporting the law officers, supporting that they do their job. And therefore, those people then go out and do their jobs knowing that they have their backs covered. So
this president of the National Border Patrol, he said there's a vibe, there's an energy in the Border Patrol that's never been here before in 20 years I've been in the patrol. Right? He's saying everybody, they're eager about their, you know, they're happy. Their morale is good. They don't have a president who's working against them.
And I just want, I'm going to be taking off, folks, for the next two segments. I'm leaving Al all alone, so Al, you behave. Uh-huh. But I just want to make this comment, and again, this is also positive for gold. U.S. slaps new sanctions on Iran after certifying its compliance with nuclear deal. So the Trump administration certified to Congress late Monday, but senior officials made clear that certification was grudging, and therefore there might be other sanctions added. So that's all positive for gold, folks.
Okay, I'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Going to take a couple of commercials. Melody will be gone for a little while, and if you stay tuned, we'll have some interesting information. Stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. talkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk, and this is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. All your gold and silver coin needs. I've got an article here from ZeroHedge.com, and the headline is, Ron Paul warns central bankers are always wrong, especially before a bust. According to former Texas Congressman Ron Paul, the global dollar-based monetary system is in serious jeopardy. Now, that's not exactly news, especially not to me, not to people who listen to this program. We harp on that on a regular basis, and we've been pointing in that direction for several years. And pointing, look, the dollar-based monetary system is in serious jeopardy. And it's just interesting and it's encouraging to see that Congressman Paul agrees with that idea. And it's not new to him either, but just pick up that Mr. Paul, or former Congressman Paul, he says, yeah, this dollar-based monetary system is in big trouble. Why? It's all debt-based. It's all fiat. All right? It's based on the fiat dollar, which has lost over 95% of its purchasing power over the last 45 years. It's worth a nickel or less compared to what it was worth back in 1971. All right? And that trend tells us it's going to be worth 4 cents and then 3 cents and then 2 cents and then 1 cent and so on. We are getting close to the end of the line for the fiat dollar. No, I'm not saying it's going to happen. It could happen. Something dramatic could happen within the next 6 months. It might not happen for a couple more years. But nevertheless, Congressman Paul agrees. And he continues, as he says, contrary to Federal Reserve Chairwoman Janet Yellen's assurances that there won't be another major crisis in our lifetime, the next economy cratering fiat currency crash could happen as soon as next month. This is from Ron Paul. Paul said Yellen's attitude scares him because central bankers are always wrong, especially before a bust. There is a subjective element to when people lose confidence, and when is the day going to come when people realize we're dealing with money, and I object to the term money, I'd say it's just currency, that has no intrinsic value to it. We're dealing with too much debt, too much bad investment, and it will come to an end. Something that's too good to believe usually is, and it usually ends. One thing's for sure, we're getting closer every day, and the crash might come this year, but it might take a year or two also. Paul, he is as much in the dark as I am in terms of when is this going to hit the wall. It's like riding on the Titanic. If you know in advance, this thing's going to sink, but we don't know exactly when, all right? So when is the right time to put on your life preserver if you know the Titanic? We know it's going to sink, but we don't know exactly where or when. It's not going to get to New York. It's not going to get to its destination. It's going to sink. Is it time to sober up, or do we have time to catch a fast drink down in the lounge? Listen to the music, maybe have a couple of dances with the good-looking girls and so on. And do we have time for that, or should we put our life preservers on now? Because, you know, the end of this definitely is in sight. Should we be prepared right now? And Paul is talking about there's a subjective element to when people lose confidence. And confidence, so the Federal Reserve has told us repeatedly over the years that the key element to supporting the value of the U.S. dollar is the confidence of the American people. What is that confidence in? You know, we have confidence in our fiat currency. Well, that's what gives it value, yeah. But what is that confidence in? Is it confidence that the Cowboys are going to win the Super Bowl next year? Is that what it is? Is it confidence that Donald Trump is going to balance the budget? Is that what it is? No. It's not about the Cowboys. It's not about balancing the budget. What do we have confidence in? It's confidence that the debt that underlies the currency can and will be paid. And as long as the public believes that, well, we can continue to conduct domestic commerce and international commerce. It can continue to function based on intrinsically worthless pieces of paper or even intrinsically worthless digital currency. As long as we have confidence. But there is a point where people are going to begin to realize that the confidence is irrational, it's unjustified. And as people pick up on that, they're going to sit back and say, wait a second. You mean this is just a debt instrument? This green piece of paper in my wallet is just a debt instrument. It's not really an asset. It's a liability. When they begin to understand how bizarre our monetary system is and how contrary to what most people suppose, you know, we treat these green pieces of paper as if they're assets. And they're really liabilities. They're debt instruments. And if anything happens where the debt can't be paid, then what is the value of the debt instruments that were issued to memorialize the debt? This includes the U.S. bonds, of course, got $20 trillion in national debt that they admit to, and perhaps a great deal more than that, but $20 trillion they admit to. What happens if government is forced to admit, gee, we can't pay the debt? The consequences of making that admission, one of the first consequences is the value of virtually all U.S. bonds that are held anywhere on the face of the earth would drop. They could drop by 5%, 10%, 20%. I don't know how much they'd drop, but they would drop. It would be a significant decline simply because somebody, the government, had to admit, gee, we can't even pay the interest on the debt we have right now. It would challenge the value and diminish the perceived value of all of those debt instruments, those bonds. And rightfully so, because what is a debt instrument? It's nothing but a promise to pay. A gold coin is a payment. Silver coin is a payment. It's not a promise to pay. If you've got a gold coin in your hand, if you've got a silver coin in your hand, you have been paid. If you have a piece of paper in your hand, whether it's dollars issued by the government, paper dollars, whether it's stocks, bonds, bank account book, pension fund, invoice, or ledger, if you're holding a piece of paper in your hand, it is not an asset. It is not a payment. It is a promise to pay, and that's all it is a promise. A gold coin is not a payment. You either have it or you don't have it. It's not a promise, excuse me. You either have the gold coin, in which case you have a payment, or you don't have it, in which case you do not have a payment. And this whole world right now is running on nothing but promises to pay. At a time when the national debt for the United States that they admit to is $20 trillion. Which translates into something like $130,000 for every man, woman, and child in the country. If I recall correctly, it might be more than that. I don't remember what it works out to, but the number, the fair share, your fair share and mine of the national debt is so enormous, I can't pay it. And if I had the money, I wouldn't pay it. Why would I want to send more money to Uncle Sam? He just wasted it anyway. Why would I want to support a system that is inherently fraudulent? I mean, they have led us down a path since 1971 when Nixon tethered the last remaining tie of gold to the fiat dollar, to the dollar, and rendered it a pure fiat currency. They have, our economy has tended to stagnate. Our incomes have not increased. We have been misled, deceived, damaged, diminished by our own government. And they want to sit back and say, send us some more money so we can, this time we'll do it. No, they won't. They're not going to do better. I mean, this whole thing is so complex. It's hard to understand. It's hard to believe, even if you reach a point where you say, I think I understand what's going on here. Even if you can get to that, and it's not easy, it takes some effort, but if you get to it, it still is hard to believe when you realize, my God, this is all a debt-based monetary system. The whole thing is based on promises to pay rather than payments. What would you rather have, a promise to pay or a payment? How many promises have you made in this life that you failed to keep? How many promises have been made to you that have people revoke their promises? Sorry, can't make it, can't do it. Promises are inherently risky, and everyone should understand that, because we've all received promises that weren't kept, and we've made promises that weren't kept. We didn't keep them. Promises are risky. Payment is something else. Payment, not a promise to pay, a payment. Which would you rather have? Would you rather have the promise, or would you rather have the payment? If you're smart, you'd rather have the payment. If you want to avoid risk, you take that payment. And we live at a time when the world is awash from gunnel to gunnel with promises. Everybody's made all these incredible promises. I think I've seen that there's $220 trillion in promises on the international debt instruments on the international level. Can't be paid. I know that some of them will be paid, but most will not. And you might have a paper promise to pay that's going to turn into something. You may have a paper promise to pay that says it's worth, say, $500,000. Right? You may get your $500,000. It might happen. But on average, people who are holding their wealth, storing it in the form of a paper promise to pay, are going to lose at least half the value of that wealth. And in my estimation, you're going to lose 80-90% of the face value of that wealth. You had that note, you had that piece of paper, and said, oh, look, I'm a rich guy. I've got $500,000, or I've got a piece of paper with somebody's signature on it. Yeah, at a time when there's so many pieces of paper that all of the promises can't be kept. And inevitably, most of them are, I think 80-90% of them are going to be repudiated. Before this is done, might happen this year. Ron Paul thinks a crash could happen before the end of this year, but he admits it might not be for a couple more years. Right? We would hope it's a couple more years. But just the same, it's like that analogy of traveling on the Titanic with foreknowledge. You know, oh my gosh, the ship's going under. Shall I go to the lounge and party? Or shall I put on my life preserver and stay close to a lifeboat? What should I do? You know, the sensible thing is get your life preserver and stay close to the lifeboat. This is going to be a bad situation for everybody who's hanging out in the lounge. Eventually, this is going to collapse. The ship is going to sink, and those who are drunk in the lounge celebrating are going to die. And those who are close to the lifeboats and have their life preservers on, they're going to survive. It's up to all of us to take personal responsibility and do whatever you think has to be done in order to protect you and your family best you can. And it's going to require savings. If we're going into the kind of trouble that I think we're headed for, and that Ron Paul apparently believes we're headed for, one of the things you're not going to be able to count on is your job. We're talking about a serious recession, possible depression, maybe something even worse than a depression, at least the depressions we've seen. We're talking about, and when it breaks down, how are you going to feed yourself? If you lose your job, and you just might, how are you going to feed yourself? And the answer is savings. I mean, and even that might not be easy, but you'll have a chance if you have savings. And then the next question is, savings in what medium? Are you going to save your wealth in the form of Confederate money? That doesn't make any sense. How does saving your wealth in the form of fiat dollars make any more sense than saving it in the form of Confederate money? I mean, in the end, both of them are intrinsically worthless. Which one? And admittedly, the fiat dollars are worth more right now than the Confederate dollars are. And they are used habitually and they're institutionalized or here and around the world. But how long can that stand? People figure out, oh my gosh, the debt can't be paid. And that's what we're coming to. I think that's the fundamental reason why the Federal Reserve they insisted on near zero interest rates. It was to allow the government of the United States to continue to borrow without having a cost of borrowing that was so high it might push us to default. The government can't dare default on its bonds. If they do default on the bonds, people lose confidence in the bonds. All of a sudden, the value of the bonds falls, which causes trouble all by itself. But additional to that, what creditors are going to lend to the government when they know they can't get paid? When they know the government is already defaulting on its bonds, will they lend any more to the government? And as I've argued for maybe at least a month, maybe two, could be wrong, but I have a suspicion that this system, because we have a debt-based monetary system, a system that's based on nothing but promises to pay, that's what debt is, a promise to pay. It's a promise. It's not a tangible asset like a gold coin. Gold coin is not a promise. You have it, you don't have it. It's very simple. Well, if these promises to pay fail in the debt-based monetary system and people lose confidence in the debt-based monetary system, I don't think the system can survive. And the reason that's important, I think, is because the Great Depression, we still had real money. During the Great Depression, it was difficult. It was a hard time, but we had gold from 1929 on up to all the way to 1933 before they pulled the gold out of circulation. And we had silver all the way up to 1965. 68, really, they stopped redeeming Federal Reserve notes or silver certificates for silver. The point is, we still had, during the Great Depression, we still had a viable form of money. The great danger in the Depression that might be coming is that in the context of that depression, we won't have a working currency. And we won't be able to easily replace our Federal Reserve notes. What are you going to do? I think you're going to need gold and silver. We're going to take a break for a couple of commercials. I'll be right back. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two Black Berkey Elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis. This is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. I've been reading from an article posted on Zero Hedge entitled "Ron Paul Warns Central Bankers Are Always Wrong, Especially Before a Bust." And among other things, Paul is criticizing Janet Yellen's recent statement where she says she doesn't think we'll see another financial crisis in her lifetime. All right. Well, Paul is saying that's nonsense. We're going to see something maybe as soon as before the end of this year, but in Paul's opinion, 2 or 3 years at the most. Paul advised, I will read a little more from this article. It says, Paul advises that for those who are already girding for the crash by buying gold and silver and stocking their basements with provisions like canned food and bottled water, the rewards for their foresight will only grow with the passage of time. Right? He's saying, look, if you're getting ready for this, again, the analogy, if you're on the Titanic and you're putting on your life vest and staying close to a lifeboat, the rewards are going to grow with the passage of time. People are going to laugh at you or sitting in the lounge getting drunk and celebrating and having a party. But when that ship goes down, they're going to be wishing they were close to the lifeboats. They're going to be wishing they had their life preservers. Paul is just saying, look, if you have the foresight to prepare, you will the rewards will only grow with the passage of time. He says, actually, the longer it takes to hit, the better it is for us, meaning if it's better if it doesn't happen this year and it happens next year or the year after that or even the year after that. He says, the longer it takes to hit, the better it'll be for us. The more we can get prepared personally as well as warn other people about what's coming, all right? So maybe there's time here, but it's not time to party. I mean, figure out what you need, what you think you're going to need to survive what may be coming. And when you have all of that, when you have as much of that prepared and stored and stockpiled and whatever, and you think you have that and you've got it protected and whatever, all right, then if you want to stop down at the lounge on the Titanic and have a couple of martinis, maybe that's okay. As long as you've got that life preserver on and you've got your ticket to be one of the first to get on the lifeboat, okay, maybe that's time to have a little, you know, have a drink or two. But it is not sensible to simply celebrate right now and, you know, dissipate your energy and your wealth because you think, oh, it'll be another year or two or three. We don't have to worry right now. No, maybe we do. Anybody who looks can see this is coming. And if you see it coming, right, then you won't have time to prepare the day before it arrives. The sensible thing, if you can see it coming, get ready now, even though it might not be coming for who knows how long. Paul goes on and he says, actually, it takes the longer it takes, the better it is, better it is for us. And he's talking about, it's a sign, he says, it's a sign that the authoritarians are clinging to power so they can collect the revenues, collect the taxes, and make sure you're not getting around the system. That's what the cashless society is all about. All right? He's saying the reason they want to get rid of your cash and get into a cashless system where everything is on a card, on a little, was done with a debit card, a credit card, whatever, but a financial card, is they can tax every one of your transactions just as soon as you make them. They can tax whatever money you have. They'll know where your currency is squirreled away. If it's in the bank of ABC or the bank of CDE, they'll know what bank where you have your currency. And Paul, this is interesting. Again, former Congressman Ron Paul. He says that's what the cashless society is all about. Now make sure you're not getting around the system. Why does the government care so much as to whether or not you're paying your full income taxes or not? And the answer has to be because the government is in desperate straits. It needs every dime it can lay its hands on. And if it has to establish a cashless society to increase the tax revenues by 2%, it's going to do it. Right? They need every dime they can get. And this is part of the business of government in the first place. We have the idea, the image comes to mind of a government, a tax man coming and putting a gun to your head and threatening you with jail or beating you with a club or something like that in order to get the money from you to give to the government. That's the way they used to do it. Tax man used to just beat people until they finally gave up some money. But with a cashless society, they don't need to beat you over the head. If you can't buy dinner unless you've got one of these plastic cards, you're going to get the plastic card. You're going to get the debit card. And as soon as you do, they're going to know how much wealth you have squirreled away in that card. And they're going to tax it or perhaps even take it. They don't need to come out with a gun and a club. They have a cashless society. They will be able to they'll be able to tax your income, tax your spending. Right? And, you know, that's one of the odd things about this, about our entire tax system. It's enough that you pay income tax. Right? But in addition to income tax, you also pay sales tax and scores of other taxes besides that. But just, you get taxed if you earn money and they take 10, 15, 20% off the top. If you earn $100, the government wants 20. If the remaining $80 you have, they want another 8% when you go to spend it, which is going to take another $6, $7 off of whatever you've earned. And then they may want a tax to impose on what you store in the bank. And the point is, anytime you touch the dollar, the government's argument is that you have to pay them. They are entitled to tribute. You pay tribute when you earn the money, and if you have any money to spend, you pay tribute when you spend the money. You know, I think if we had a fair taxing system, I think it would be reasonable if people paid taxes when they spent or when they earned. Right? But I don't see the point. There's an inherent unfairness to my mind to tax people for not only when they earn money, but also when they spend money. It seems unreasonable to me. Of course, it's been going on for centuries, and I don't expect it to stop anytime soon. But from my mind, from my perspective, you know, okay, fine. We want to tax me on my income. Okay. But once I've paid the tax on the $100, I gave the federal government $20, why do I have to pay another $8 to the state? And they're going to say, well, because the state has to have a way of taxing people too, or 8% to the state. I get that, but somehow that should be incorporated into the original $20. The state's revenue, from my perspective, and it's easy to say and probably hard to do, but just the same, state ought to get its revenue out of that first 20. Maybe you take 30 off the top. But after that, after you've paid your tax, it's yours. Do what you want with it. And they don't need to know about it. But with the cashless society, they're going to know if you've got any money squirreled away. They're going to know if you're spending money that you can't account for from your revenue. And they're going to want their cut. They're going to say, we're entitled to a cut. We want something. All right? And they are simply determined to grab whatever they can. And part of the reason is not just that they're corrupt, but that they are desperate. They see exactly, they understand the kinds of information that we're presenting on this program. They understand better than we do, than I do, than Melody does. They understand, oh, we're in big trouble. And it's part of the reason, and Ron Paul is essentially saying, that's why they want the cashless society. They want to get the revenue. Why? They're desperate for it. Why? Because they are near bankruptcy. I didn't see the message. Producer sent the message a couple of minutes ago. We've got a caller, Lance, is in East Texas, giving us a call. Lance, are you still there?
Oh, yeah, man. I'm here.
Oh, Lance, thanks for holding.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, totally cool. Hey, big shout-out to my brother, Ivan. Love that guy. Love his commentary. Call in, Ivan. Now, my buddy called in and was almost half dissing you out about how you over...
Well, he's right. It happens a lot, but I'll tell you part of the reason for it is I actually give a damn about some of these ideas. And it's not just a job.
Al,
you get passionate about it sometimes.
Listen to me. Here's the deal. The tension between you and Mel is why I listen every day, man.
Well, yeah. We've had other people say the same thing. We've had other people say they enjoy when Melody and I get to kind of growling at each other, and it's not something we fake just to try to drag in some more of the audience. Well, there's a contest going on here at times, a little bit of conflict, and the audience likes it, at least part of the audience.
I know I like it, man. Yep. But again, back to Edwin Vieira Jr. and his seminal work on constitutional money, which leads me back to Mel and why you need to buy the silver, what we call junk, which ain't junk, it's just used silver, 90%. You have to buy this stuff. You have to be invested. You have to know about arbitrage. Do you know about arbitrage, Al?
No, go ahead and explain it to me, Lance.
Excuse the people about arbitrage, please.
Well, you go ahead and explain it, because I can tell you that I don't know about it.
Oh, dadgum. Okay. Well, here you go. You play the ratio. The ratio between gold and silver is 76.76 or something absurd like this, 78.
Yep.
I don't know.
Like 76 ounces of silver for 1 ounce of gold.
Yeah, but historically it's 12-1 to 16-1, correct?
Oh, when you look at the graph, and I've looked at graphs, and I'm not an expert on it, but it appears to me that historically, the average, I'd say it's probably in the neighborhood of 40-1. I've seen it go down as low as 10-12-1, but if you average it out looking at the graphs, it looks to me like 40-1, but it's still way better for silver than it is right now.
Okay.
I think it'll go back there. I think silver is a great buy. It's just a question of how soon it'll be.
You, as it goes down from 76 or 77, whatever it is, down to 40, you trade your silver for gold. Thereby, when the ratio goes back up, you trade your gold for silver. This is called arbitrage. Have you not heard of this?
Yeah, I understand. I understand exactly what you're talking about, but I believe
arbitrage.
That arbitrage is a broad concept that doesn't just involve gold and silver. It can be applied to gold and silver.
You can do it.
I didn't know what you were talking
about
exactly.
You can do it with any commodity.
Sure, you can do it with commodities. You can do it with, I would assume you can do it with stocks and bonds. You go into bonds until stocks become preferable. You move into stocks, then you go back to bonds. You bounce. You play one against the other. And if you can do it intelligently and you are fortunate, you can make a profit.
Every day, because your insight and Mel's insight is what keeps me coming back. Day in, day out, it's what keeps Ivan coming back. And Ivan, call in, brother. I love your comments. And cheers, bro.
All right, Lance. Thanks very much. We appreciate your call and appreciate you listening to the program. Where are we? Got about a minute and a half left. Let me see if I can find A brief comment to fill in. What we got? There's one. Yahoo News headline: needles everywhere. Drug crisis creates pollution threat. They're complaining syringes hide in the weeds along hiking trails and in playground grass. They wash into the rivers and float downstream to land on beaches. They pepper baseball dugouts, sidewalks, and streets. Syringes left by drug dealers amid the heroin crisis are turning up everywhere. Well, this is interesting news. They're talking about Portland. They found 700 needles so far this year. Up in San Francisco, they found 13,000 in just the month of March alone, all right, as compared to only 2,900 in the same month of 2016. Point, we have a big heroin drug epidemic, and as the number of people using needles to inject drugs rises, we can speculate that there will be a renewed AIDS epidemic over the next few years. The consequences of that AIDS, people may contract AIDS at this time, might not show up for a couple of years, but we can expect to see an AIDS outbreak. If we had more time, we'd explore the idea whether or not these needles are evidence of a declining economy. Are people injecting, are they taking heroin because they are so depressed? And what does it say about our economy? We're out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. Hope you'll tune in then. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night. I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. If I got me a wealthy man.